Hello, 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 and welcome to Buzz Binging. My name is Natalie.
And I'm Christy, her mom.
And we are going to be covering season 3, episode 9, Imbroglio. And episode 10, Coup de Coeur. Okay. I almost said coup de grace, and that's not correct.
But there was a comparison.
I know there was. That's why I got confused.
Yeah, I understand why you were confused.
Anyway.
So, yeah, it's all good. It is all good. But we are very excited that you are joining us. We are doing this a little bit differently, and it's kind of fun for us because we're actually in pajamas on the couch like we would be, you know, actually when we're binging. So this is kind of fun.
I'm also home, so yay.
Always good. Always win. But we are also going to be discussing all of these things. We have our disclaimers, which include that we are going to have spoilers for other seasons. There's going to be cursing. Oh, yes. And we are having things to drink. So what are you having?
I am having ginger ale because even when at home, I just choose the most basic thing. Even when I have like anything available to me, I will choose the most basic thing.
Should I call you a basic bitch?
I already call myself a basic bitch, so might as well join the party.
It's a little sad. But I am having a Rossini cocktail, and I felt like it was appropriate for this combination of episodes, mostly the second one. Because it is red and it has that kind of...
It's like an ombre.
Right. Well, it is. It's got strawberry daiquiri juice, strawberry mix, and sparkling wine. And it's super tasty. And it is appropriate in my mind because, number one, we've got Valentine's Day coming up. Number two, the Margaret episode, the second, the cri de coeur involves an affair of the heart, a cry of, from the heart, right? And so...
Sorry. Something's starting my throat there.
Margaret. So we will be getting to all of that when we get to that episode, but we've got to start with episode 9, which is Imbroglio.
Oh, is okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was concerned about that one. All right.
We go from Italian then to French. Is that
changing a lot of languages? It's usually either Latin or something like that. So I can just stumble my way through or Welsh.
You know, this is about English royalty and we're doing a lot of different languages, not
but
English.
But they've learned French. So
okay.
You have to deal with it.
Yeah, whatever. So this episode starts out in the clouds.
Well,
and they are bringing David's body back to England for his funeral and his burial and all that stuff. And he is buried on the grounds. I'm not sure where. I'm assuming it's Windsor, but I don't know.
Maybe it is Windsor Castle.
Really hard to say. He's buried on the grounds somewhere.
In the middle of a field, alone.
Right, but he's not like interred in one of the cathedrals.
Yeah, he's not going to go in Westminster.
No, yeah. Like right. So Charles is looking unhappy.
Well, so is Wallace, but you can barely tell.
Oh my God. Wallace is there. But interestingly, the Queen Mother looks serene, like finally.
She doesn't give a shit. She hated him.
No. Wallace then thanks Charles for his letters.
Well, before that, he looks at it, but it's such an obvious thing, but he does look at a picture of David, and then it kind of like you see the reflection of him, and then it's like, oh my God, of course.
We're so similar. We can't pick up on the symbolism here. But Wallace thanks him for the letters, gives Charles a pocket watch that apparently she had given to David at one point in time. That is a pocket watch compass combo.
Ooh.
And it's engraved. Engraved? Question mark? Yes, it's engraved.
Yeah.
And the engraving is, I can't remember.
I didn't write it down either.
But it's something about like, hey, don't lose your way. more or less.
Then they talk about how he's going to hang out with Camilla before going back to Dartmouth and how she is the one. And then she gives him two pieces of advice. One, never turn your back on love. And two, watch out for your family. Then she has this quote when she's talking about never turn your back on love. She's like, David never once regretted it. And I wrote, oh, he definitely did. Those sad bagpipe sessions weren't because he was basking in the joy of a true love without regret.
Right. I mean, he definitely did. But the other part of it is like, Charles's response is, oh, they have my best interests at heart. And she's like, no, they don't. Oh, But then we hear Charles on the phone with Camilla.
No, he's not. He's in bed with Camilla.
Oh, he's in bed with
Camilla. This is post-coitus. These are the kinds of talks that you definitely have after sex.
And so they discuss Wallace is warning to him. And, oh, David was brighter and wittier and all the things, and they all united against him.
Oh no, for that quote, I was just like, when they're just listing things like brighter, wittier, more independent of thought, more true to himself. And then I wrote in all caps after that, and a traitor and a Nazi sympathizer and a complete arrogant clown fuck.
I like clown fuck. That's a good word.
I looked back because I said it at one point during Ted Lasso about Nathan. And I was that. Because I remembered I said something particularly funny to me because it just randomly came up and I was just like, clown fuckery. And I was like, perfect. That's perfect for him. And then there's like this dramatic Downton Abbey tableau of the family while he looks back and while Charles.
Right, they're all aligned against him.
And it's very, very similar to, first of all, Downton Abbey DVDs, the covers.
Oh, yeah.
Also, from first season, whenever, I almost said clarify, it might as well have been, just looks back at the family after her father died and she's the new queen and all that stuff.
She feels very alone. And of course, Charles feeling alone is not what bothers me. Charles feeling like everyone's out to get him bothers me. And I think that is the biggest distinction too, is like Elizabeth isn't feeling like everyone's out to get her. She just feels alone.
Yeah.
Like no one's trying to help.
But also him praising David, just I can't ever get behind that. Absolutely not.
Mm-mm.
And then
the thing is, he should know better.
Well, then there's this flashback to a kid, Edward, who is given a piano by his mom, even though they can't afford it. And it's apparently the prime minister, who I don't care about.
Yeah, so, he's short-lived for good reason.
This is such a random shoehorned in like mini thing.
Yeah.
It has barely anything to do with anything.
It's poor.
It's just for a montage to include a piano.
How much did that fucking cost? Or did someone donate? Hey, I've got a Steinway here. Let's use this.
It's a priceless Steinway.
Not anymore.
Sorry for the random Pink Panther strikes back again.
Yes.
I don't know. One of them. Right. The third one.
Right. Oh, God. How much do we love Peter Sellers?
Oh, we love that series.
Yes, we did. The Peter Sellers are the good ones. You know, Steve Martin's fine.
I don't think I've watched the Steve Martin ones. I do like Steve Martin, though, but I prefer Peter Sellers.
They're not good. Anyway, Peter Sellers is fabulous. So they talk about the labor strikes. And so Heath, who is the PM, shows up at Buckingham Palace, basically like, hey, we've been stockpiling goods. It's going to be fine.
It's okay. To be completely clear, it's the coal miners who are doing a strike and they're not providing the coal. And so the PM's like, oh, we stockpiled on coal. Don't worry about it. We're going to be fine. No,
no, you're not.
But also, when he comes in, the corgis like are coming out of the room, and he says, she's like, oh, don't worry, they don't mean any harm. And he's like, all animals mean harm, they're a meal away from barbarism. And I was like, what the fuck did that? Where the hell did that come from?
I don't necessarily disagree with the sentiment, having seen, you know, like,
I don't, but they're corgis.
Oh, no, I wasn't thinking about the corgis. I was thinking about humans.
No, he was talking about the corgis.
Yeah, okay. Anyway, so then we've got Philip, and Philip is discussing with Elizabeth. And of course, you know, the level at which Elizabeth now talks about these conversations she's having with prime ministers is an interesting shift from the first two seasons.
I think if you get bored enough to be like, all right, well, I'll talk about this. I'll talk about my day and include this now.
Right. And I can see that. I think some of it is, and it comes up again in later things at dinner with, and I think it's in the same episode where she's just very elaborately talking about her opinions.
No, it's next episode.
But anyway, this one, it's not that bad. But you know, she's talking with Philip, because I don't mind her talking with Philip about it.
Of course.
And Philip's response is, people don't trust him because he's unmarried. And he says, when you find the right one, it's like mother. And I'm thinking, that is not a compliment. Because you didn't
realize
you
didn't
like
your
mother.
I didn't realize he said mother.
I thought it was mother.
I don't know. But he also mentions that he wasn't married. But there was like this rumor that there was once a girl. And then when he came back from war, then he chickened out of marrying her, and that's it. Like, what does that have to do with anything?
Well, nothing. Other than he's unmarried, and well, I mean, I guess it's that lack of ability to commit, maybe, is what they're talking about. Is like he's just very, I don't know,
wishy-washy,
not a family guy. And so then Philip segues into, hey, Elizabeth, it's your turn to give the 25th anniversary speech because, you know, it's your turn.
I did the 10th anniversary and it was a great triumph. So,
right. So it's your turn.
No pressure.
And Elizabeth's like, why? But Elizabeth then says, well, Charles may be in love with Camilla. And Philip's like, you can't be in love with a girl like Camilla.
Well, she brings it up because she found out through the letters to David.
Right.
So that's how she knows the information. But yeah, Philip is like, oh, she's just a distraction from the rigors of the Navy at Dartmouth. And
right. And just a bit of fun. So
is Wild Oats.
Yeah, exactly. Which is, you know, like the Dickie mentality as well. So
it's certainly a dick mentality.
Yeah, it is. So Charles, and they show him doing basically all the stuff that he had been sent off to do in Scotland, but now he's actually doing it in the Navy.
At least he's trying.
He is trying. He does seem to be competent at it. So his upbringing actually seemed to have helped him in some way. But he calls Camilla. And he's talking about, you know, this sense of safety and things.
He likes being at sea. It's very poetic. Yes.
And he goes into poetic things. And you know, then they're both of them are like all fucking, I'm confused. I don't know.
There's this thing at the very end of that conversation where Camilla's like, oh, everything's so complicated. And Andrew's in the background. And
Andrew Parker Bowles.
And you clearly see that they just had sex.
Yes. Oh, it's obvious.
Because I always call the side piece after I have sex with the main piece.
Right, exactly. So she's like, you know, I might be beginning to like you because, you know, Charles keeps fishing. Like, hey, do you like me? Do you care about? Yeah, exactly. I want to fucking kill her.
Shoes.
Yeah,
it's exactly. Not that hard. Just shoes.
And then, you know, because she is so indecisive, like, but the phone cuts off because it's long distance, whatever. So Dickie then shows up to see Charles, and I guess they're going to have a picnic in the car or something. No, they have lunch. But he can see that Charles is unhappy. And he asks if...
Oh, was it the Navy? He's like, it's Camilla.
Yeah, he's like, well, are you two still using each other? And Charles just seems so hurt by that term.
He's like, I'm in love with her. I want you to manage the family's reactions when I tell them I want to marry this girl.
And Dickie's kind of like, shit.
After the phone conversation saying, I'm confused, I don't think that's a great idea to just go ahead and
propose. Right, I mean, I'm sorry. This is being portrayed, and honestly, I can see... a lot about this being like, Charles, you're just a dumbass.
Read the signs.
Sorry, you're just a dumbass here. But whatever. So Charles is like, you know, trying to convince Dickie to help him. Dickie then, you know, he leaves and he's like, these montages are really fucking long. And we're just kind of skipping through them because there's a whole lot of visual, like walking through Dartmouth kind of stuff. And it's like, you know, this season, you mentioned it before, has all
you can't unsee fact. It now, can you?
Well, no, I mean, you know, it's majestic and, oh, hey, we got permission to film at Dartmouth. We need to use some
footage.
You
didn't need to, though.
Or whatever. But it's
kind of
like,
more of your budget gone. For
exactly,
whatever reason.
Whatever. Fuck it. So then, you know, Dickie goes and he's blaming himself. He wants to discuss
He goes to the Queen Mother.
Right.
Who actually has an active role now.
Right. But this, and I actually wrote it down as a note in a couple of the later episodes that we're going to be... But I feel like the Queen Mother, much like every other fucking character with this shift, is being portrayed as kind of bipolar.
Well, she's always been a little bit bipolar, though.
Well, I think it's everybody.
Well, think
though,
about it this way. Like, she's reacting very similarly to this whole Camilla thing that she did to Peter. So it's kind of like, and to Philip as well. It's just like, oh, just send him off. Oh, just do this. Oh, just like make sure that they like stay apart.
Right. But the tone is very much, I'll manage this. I will, you know,
she's giving something because she's just been on the couch watching TV like us. We don't need that. We need her to be something else.
Oh, right. No, I like her more active, but I
feel like this is just a random thought, but I felt like when I was watching it, I was like, maybe this actress was just like, I'm not given any of this, any like substance in these episodes. I want something to do. And they're like, okay, we'll give you this.
Yeah, we'll give you this because we're not going to have you riding a horse off in Skeleton.
Because you never really see her and Dickie interact ever, but he goes directly to her to about this situation.
And I'm right. Like, and what she says, and it's kind of like the old, you know, having the bad guy being Tommy Lasso. Like, so you have Dickie being the bad guy, and he goes to the Queen Mother, and Queen Mother is like, I will handle the Shans and the Parker Bowles. You need to handle Charles.
Yeah, that's fair.
It's a fair division of labor. And so the labor leader, you see that segue there?
Oh, well, okay, to be specific, he's going, like, Dickie's plan is to send Charles away to some remote location overseas for 8 months so that
he just like get it out of his system.
Like, that's worked in the past. Literally, like, we were mentioning that. Like, they mentioned the whole thing about like keeping Philip and Elizabeth apart for 4 months. That didn't work. Mm-hmm. Then for like Peter and Margaret, that mostly didn't work. And now they're trying to do it again. I'm just like, really?
Yeah, exactly. But you know, we have the power to like keep them apart, so let's try that. Sure.
And to make it look natural.
Right. Because, you know, it's just the way things go.
So
Heath and the leader of the coal mining group have a meeting, and the talks break down basically because Heath's not listening.
I'm from a lower class background. You don't know my life.
Yeah. And exactly. There's a whole lot of the kind of thing that we see a lot of now. It's like, oh, you have privilege. Oh, you suck. Oh, you know, like, oh, you're just like these menial people. I mean, it's just,
I agree with the coal miners' plight, though. I think they should be paid more.
Well, right. And I think that is, you know, the reality of the work that they do and the value that it has. It's something that someone like Heath doesn't understand, and they actually bring like a piece of coal.
Have you ever been to a pit before?
Right.
No, not on TV.
Right.
That stuff.
Right. And so he has to handle the coal, and he can't even get it off of him because it's like, it's going to be with you. You know, this is part of like your whole thing. So, but he has this plan.
To have nationwide power cuts.
Right. And so there are these rolling blackouts, and you see it, like the palaces are all lit by candlelight, which honestly is very romantic and lovely. It makes me feel of like young Victoria, you know, those movies and, you know, all
that stuff. One movie. Yeah.
Yeah. That one movie. But, you know, we've seen like the, you know, Victorian era stuff, and it's lovely.
I love The Young Victoria.
It is a great movie. If you have not seen it, you should see that.
Into this kind of stuff, and Downton Abbey, you will love it. Emily Blunt, it has Rupert
and
Friend.
It's way better than the actual Victoria series on PBS.
Oh, absolutely.
Way better. So yeah, absolutely. Just, you know, that series is fine, but it is a bite-sized piece. The cast is wonderful, the writing is lovely, and oh my god, the music, it's just
it makes me want to cry.
It's so good.
Anyway,
so the Queen Mother meets with the Shans and the Parker Bowleses, and
Parker Bowleses, though.
But, you know, this is what's interesting to me physically, this actress. And I do like this about her. She's more graceful.
Yeah.
And more well-spoken, I think, when she does speak. Because when she's not being the comedic relief, she's well-spoken. She's very articulate.
To get something done, she'll get it done.
Right, but she is more... She finesses.
Oh yeah,
in a way that we
didn't listen to
see
her
with the last actress. And so she's like, she tells them, "Look, we have a little imbroglio," and they're kind of like, "Something's going on, you know, something's
not
wrong."
Know?
Yeah, right. How
the
fuck
oblivious?
Did you not know?
It's kind of like with
you
with
don't
Elizabeth.
Know what your son's doing.
Well, Elizabeth had the excuse of like she wasn't paying close attention to Charles while he was in college, but it's kind of like.
Of these sets of parents should have some fucking clue that the fucking is going on. The clown fuckery is going on because these people are clowns, let's face it.
Oh,
and so, and actually that reminds me of Charles and his clown makeup. So
I was thinking of that too. I was listening to that episode today.
God, that's awesome.
But
yeah, fuckery is happening.
That was the weirdest.
That actually
laugh.
That would be like really funny.
I'm sorry, that was the weirdest laugh screen. Ever. But yeah, the absolute. I'm looking in the mirror just with this clown makeup. This is my life
is
now.
Clown. when there's no one around.
Oh, Bring in the Clowns by Sondheim.
Send in the Clowns. There you go. Right. So Charles has been given a posting. And he's also very honored. But this is clearly something Dickie's done.
Well, right? I would also like to point out with the Queen Mother, when she's talking to the families, it like pans down to behind her and it's like a young picture of Charles, or a picture of young Charles. Like, and it's just like, this is in his best interest. And honestly, yeah, probably. Honestly, I don't think that Camilla is a good thing for him, but he's doing this to himself, so fuck him.
Right, but again, we see as things progress, like some of the other choices are not fabulous either.
We'll see.
But anyway, so Charles asked to see Elizabeth, and he goes in to see the secretaries, right? Like he goes in and he's made to wait. And he's in this waiting area and he's seeing how incredible, because she's writing a speech and Martin tells him, look, she's writing a speech, she's got some stuff. And there's clearly like this mayhem going on.
The blackouts are still going on and the staff are trying to like take out, like put out the candles whenever they don't need them.
Right. And so, you know, Charles, you can see he's not, he sees the beehive element of the job, but he doesn't really fully get it.
Which is why I feel like it's stupid that he hasn't gotten this exposure to it. Because at least Elizabeth, even at the very beginning of the series, was at least saw a little bit of it, a little bit of a slice of it with her father.
Yeah.
But yeah. Either way.
Anyway, so Charles says he's got this posting in the Caribbean. And he's like, I don't deserve it. And I've got this promotion and I deserve it. And it's wrong and blah, blah, blah. And he asks if Elizabeth arranged it. Of course, Elizabeth's like, I don't know any of that. And he's like, well, you did this to break me and Camilla. And she's like, who's Camilla? Kind of like, she's still a little clueless.
Well, she knows about Camilla, but she doesn't know. Like, he does relent, like when she's like, oh, I didn't do anything. Then he's like, oh, okay, well, did anybody else in the family do it? Because clearly this isn't normal, because I'm not qualified to get this posting. And so she's like, whatever. And then he storms off and then
but this part of what he says when he storms off is like, I won't be pushed aside like David and Margot. It's like, so I know what the writers, I know what the writers are trying to do. They're putting him in the wild child.
No, but you have to admit that this is a very similar situation.
Self-destructive? Yes.
Well, okay, it's a very similar situation to Margaret.
Yes.
So you can't help but like understand why he brought Margaret up, but like the whole David thing, I mean, it's just like that's different.
Right, but again, the David thing was very, very public and he would have known about it. The Margaret thing, I don't know what he
did. But he clearly doesn't know everything about David.
Right. Right. Or which again, you're going to be the ruler. You need to know that one of your ancestors was a fucking Nazi sympathizer.
Well, to be fair, like it's not like Elizabeth and Philip told many people or anybody at all, really.
No, but he's going to be the monarch. He needs to know this shit and like things not to do.
I'm not saying he should. Do not be David. Regardless.
Yeah. Anyway, so
Elizabeth summons the Queen
Mother. Queen Mother and Dickie. She automatically knows it's them. Somehow. It's like, why are you not summoning Tommy Lassell? Is Tommy Lassell's dead? It's possible.
Oh, that's sad.
That would be sad. We didn't know anything.
But we don't know.
No. So she advocates for Charles in this meeting with the Queen Mother. And the Queen Mother is like, oh, you know, Camilla is, you know, just unstable and she would destabilize monarchy and blah, blah, blah. And Dickie, like, it's all Dickie's fault. Everyone's like basically saying it's Dickie's fault.
Well, he encouraged it.
I love the part that comes with this, though. They juxtapose it with Anne in her car singing David Bowie's Starman. And this actress can actually sing, which is kind of nice. And you know, she pulls up and she's clearly like the funky, cool girl.
But I also just love that song so much.
I do. I love David Bowie. So, yeah, you can't go wrong with David Bowie.
I wrote in parentheses when I made a note about that. I was like, because they might as well use the decade to their advantage.
Absolutely.
And they start implementing that kind of thing.
But I also love that, you know, this meeting is basically Elizabeth, Philip, Dickie, and the Queen Mother, and they bring in Anne when Anne shows up. Yes. And Anne is brought in to talk to them, and Philip's there now too.
Madeline. Oh, there's this one
so
line.
Sarcastic. Well, oh my god.
I have a line where it's just, she's like, well, she likes Charles, but she's obsessed with Andrew. And then Philip on the sideline is just like, oh, spare me. And I'm like, me too, Philip, I wish. But I also would like to point out there are a lot of unique shots in this episode. Yeah. The director clearly wanted to do something really artistic with it, because you see a lot of symmetry with like how people are placed and blocking and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. I really do appreciate that.
With the candlelight too.
Yeah, that too. Nice. They clearly had a lot of fun. Kudos to the director. I really enjoyed the direction of this.
Yeah. And I do agree with that. They ask Anne, well, what do you think about this Camilla thing? And she's like, well, it's fine as long as there are three in a marriage, as long as Charles is okay with three being in the marriage, because Camilla's obsessed with Andrew. And then and they're like, well, how do you know? She's like, I was caught up in it. You know,
they're like, what?
and she's so, because before they even ask her any of this, they're kind of like, oh, you can't get hysterical. And she's like, okay. Like I've ever been hysterical, fine.
Not hysterical like I usually am. And then Phil just laughs.
Right. And then she's like, well, because I was caught up in it. Sorry, mommy. I had a bit of fun. Andrew got what he wanted, Megan Camilla
but
jealous.
But the thing is, they had an arrangement. So it wasn't like they knew what they were doing.
Right.
And he was at least honest.
Right. And she's like, and you know, I hope I wasn't too emotional for you all.
And then she leaves.
It's like, and then Elizabeth's like, I need to talk to my mother. And Phil's like, queens only. Which is cute. I mean, that scene to me is really
good. I adore that scene. That's it's really so good. And then Elizabeth talks to the queen mother about the situation, what to do. And basically the queen mother's like, oh, well, I made sure that Andrew and Camilla have a date set for their wedding. And Elizabeth has to tell Charles. And she's like, I'm not going to tell Charles. This was not my fault. And so
they refer to him as stupid, naive Charles.
I mean,
and I'm like, to be fair,
if you know this, if he clearly just is not aware of how weird this situation is. Because
how could you be that dumb?
Because he knew that, like, she... Again, Anne told him as well. Mm-hmm. Anne was caught up with it, she was telling him, oh, yeah, well,
don't let them use you.
Exactly. She made it very clear. And so Charles is being like totally fine with like Camilla just constantly fucking Andrew and also just being in love with Andrew. I just don't understand how anyone could feel okay with that. I'm sure there are plenty of people
be in love with that.
And then expect as much love and attention in return.
Right.
Because there's only so much.
It is ridiculous. So they get that, and Dickie's like told, look, you've got to tell Charles about Camilla and Parker Bowles getting married. And so you see Elizabeth in silhouette.
Well, yeah, she watches it from the window, in parentheses, naturally.
Okay.
But there's great acting from Josh O'Connor. I love the facial acting, because you have to see, because think about how, this is more of an acting thing than me caring about Charles, but think about how he feels about like, oh, I thought that I'm confused. Oh, he was constantly a bit confused in this relationship, but to be told, oh yeah, she's going to get married to Andrew Parker Bowles. Oh, well, you'll move on. It's fine. Go back to your posting in the Bahamas or the Caribbean or whatever. And it's just like, what?
Yeah. Okay. So then we see that the coal strike is clearly a problem. There's a montage about that. Charles asks Camilla if she's in love with Andrew, and you know, they talk about the fact that she's getting married, and she's like, well, yes, in a manner of speaking.
Well, yeah, she says it's complicated.
More fucking vague.
Well, the thing is, he says, she first says it's complicated, and then he's like, it's not complicated. It's yes or no question. And she's like, yes, in a manner of speaking. I'm like, bitch, fuck you. But also, I wrote down, and she was like, oh, and the feeling. I did also, I got like a bit heated, but in my notes, but she was like, oh, the feelings changes. I got to know you better. And then in parentheses, I put bullshit. Now go to your fiance and spare us the next two seasons of turmoil, you two-timing bitch.
Yes, I would be good with that. But unfortunately,
they could have just gotten on with their lives. And if they truly loved each other, if Charles and Camilla truly loved each other more than she loved Andrew, they would fight for this. And Charles is willing to fight, clearly, but Camilla isn't.
Right. And that, to me, it's like...
It's very telling.
Right. It's very telling. I think it colors my view of their relationship. And I think it colors everybody's view of their relationship that exists now. She's queen consort now. And it's kind of like, wow, okay.
I think the thing is, the main problem that they're talking about is that she's in love with Andrew. Mm-hmm. If you love Charles more than Andrew, you should fight for this. And the fact that she's not.
You want the being the lover of Charles more than, because I think that the status is a big thing for her. If the status is that meaningful to you, then you're going to fight for at least that, right? And you, a lot of the world outside looks at their relationship now as, oh, she just wanted the status. She just wanted to be Charles's.
Well, the way that the show like has it is that she's like, well, everyone's saying this is the best thing for everybody in this situation. And then Charles figures out that there was definitely meddling going on in the relationship and they were kind of like pushed together more. Yeah. And he figures it has something to do with his family.
Shocking.
And then Elizabeth meets the prime minister about the crisis, but he stands firm on his beliefs that, oh, it'll sort itself out.
Right. And then she points out, look, you said you had all this coal stockpile, blah, blah, blah. And he's like, yep, no. And she's like, look, there's stubbornness on both sides. This is becoming a security issue. You need to fucking stop it.
Well, she also talks about how they need to understand the miners as people. Yes. And then at the very end of this scene, I absolutely love this. She tries to use her electric like button thing.
Yeah.
But it doesn't work because the electricity is out. And so she uses her bell. It's very subtle, but it's very, very funny to me.
Yeah. So then we go to the anniversary speech. And Philip's like, hey, you're going to say nice things about me. Hey, you know. And she points out, look, I feel for Charles in this. And Philip's like, it will all eventually be forgotten. He's going to go to the Caribbean. It's going to be fine. And, you know, we see Charles looking at the watch engraving and as he's going. Elizabeth gives a speech about family. And, you know, it's interesting to me that I found it super boring and didn't write any of it down.
I didn't write any of it down either.
Right. And I think it's reflective of the writing we're seeing now. Because I did, you know, write down parts of the speeches about marriage and I felt like there was a lot more emotion involved and I'm not really seeing.
This is also intercut with a lot of stuff as well. She's giving the speech. You see Camilla getting married to Andrew. The Queen Mother is there, which is kind of funny. Yeah. And then you have Charles crying, which honestly, but Josh O'Connor, like, it's such a good performance. I can't help but feel bad for Josh O'Connor. I don't associate with Charles. I associate with Josh O'Connor crying.
Josh O'Connor, and I will say this, and you know, some of the Josh O'Connor Charles dance scenes, you know, are definitely a win. Josh O'Connor and Tobias Menzies. Oh, also a win, and that comes
you'll
up
see,
some more.
You'll see, yeah.
But I feel like in some ways, you know, I wish that he were playing someone who isn't Charles, but he does it so well. He does it very well. He does do it very well, and he makes us kind of hate him in a way.
It makes you hate him, but you also feel a little bit of empathy because you want to make Josh O'Connor feel good. I personally do, because he just seems like a really sweet person.
Right. So he talks about battles worth fighting, and Charles, you see, he's kind of broken and he's crying at the end. Mm-hmm. So that's the end of that episode. Do you have a best part?
I have a couple. Okay. The acting by Josh O'Connor is definitely up there because
I should have given that more credit. You're right.
You see a lot of the roller coaster and how he feels about there being a lot of misunderstandings in his relationship with Camilla. Regardless of the meddling with his family, there's always going to be that complication and that uncertainty.
Yes.
And you see a lot of that, and you see a lot of nuance in his performance with that. The direction's very good. I really love a lot of shots, and the cinematography is great. The costumes are pretty good, actually, as well. I forget which ones in particular.
I didn't note any costumes.
I don't know why I wrote down costumes. I think I was coming up with something.
Good
anyway,
for you. There you go.
Breaking up Camilla and Charles is kind of good. I just think it's such a bad relationship, given the context that she's in love with Andrew, and that's pretty clear in the show. But just regardless of people, but the characters, it's not a good relationship because she's never going to be fully his she's not an object, but like she's never going to fully be interested in him because there's always going to be Andrew on the side. And so breaking them up is pretty okay in my book, because if Andrew was out of the picture and it was just a whole thing where they just thought she wasn't suitable, that's one thing. But the fact that Andrew's in the picture, like breaking them up is a common good for me.
Yeah.
Elizabeth feeling bad for Charles. I like that she stands up for him. And it's like, oh, well, he's in love. All
you
that
liked
stuff.
A lot about this episode. That's
I did, actually. I really liked how Elizabeth, again, having, I'm glad there wasn't no humanity Elizabeth, because that's been so common, especially with Charles in season in particular, with her just being like, oh, just get on with it or whatever. But you, but at least in this episode, you see how her, how the family has like handled love and all that stuff, how that, how her perception of how they handle love has changed over time, and how she wants the best for Charles and all that stuff. And I appreciate that. But of course she's going to put her foot down when she finds out about the Andrew bullshit. So I do appreciate that as well. And also the Anne scene is great. I love the Anne scene so much.
That was my only best part that I wrote down.
Oh, really?
The Anne and Philip part of that scene. And I feel like that scene, like you said, the blocking, the whole arrangement of it, like Anne is like, you know, in the star chamber kind of thing. Like, you know, they're all like staring at her. And they're like, don't be emotional. It's like, please. You know, it's like, I love her characterization. I love her performance. I think that Anne, the actress who plays her, is fabulous.
I miss her.
I do too. Tobias Menzies is great as Philip and super sarcastic and very dry. I love that.
I feel like they got it right this episode. I don't know why.
I feel like that part of it was done well. I think you have an excellent point. They portray the messiness well. I just don't like messiness. And so I think
I don't like it in my language.
You know, it's like I don't know. I have like a couple things written as worst part, but again, this was not a favorite episode for me. So I'm kind of
proud. Oh, really?
I'm proud of you for finding good things.
I did, actually. Because again, when you mentioned messiness, I do like messiness, kind of. Again, I'm the teen drama.
I think you like it a lot more than I do.
The thing is, I do, again, I watch a lot of teen dramas, so I see messiness a lot in those kinds of
like
shows.
A teen drama.
But I make, no, the thing is, I make fun of it. And so I can make fun of it here. So it kind of like translates either way. I think the thing is, I like the conclusion of the messiness in this episode, because it's not just, oh, messiness, and then like just open-ended,
right? It's move the fuck on.
Yeah,
right?
Exactly. And I like that, because I hate how toxic this, again, I try my best not to say toxic a lot, but really this is a horrible relationship that nobody needs to be a part of. And at least, again, portrayed in the show as characters, I don't like this relationship.
I really don't either.
It was fine in the beginning when you thought that she moved on from Andrew, but she never did. And so it's kind of like, and again, seeing him in the background of the phone call, or seeing just, it's so bad. It's not a good, and again, the conclusion of that, or supposed conclusion of that, makes me feel good. If it's a self-contained episode, that's the best part for me. So what are your worst parts?
Charles being a sucker and Camilla being non-committal, which, you know, I feel like it has got to be screamingly obvious to Camilla as a human being that Charles is a lovesick puppy, right? And
she uses that to her advantage.
Right, you don't use people that way. I feel like
that's a horrible,
morally wrong, and I want to slap the fucking shit out of her.
She's just the epitome of a horrible person.
Yes.
Stringing along somebody.
Yes.
Who doesn't deserve it, really.
Right. I mean, you know, Charles, up until this point,
he just made the mistake of being in love with
him. Right. He might be weak, but I don't hate him as a human for being in love with her. I just hate that
his decisions.
Seeing it. No, I hate that he can't see it. Like, he has chosen to be blind to the truth. And I think that makes me angry. It makes me angry for him, because it's very obviously a choice. Like, he's been told. He knows, and he is choosing to ignore it.
Like David.
Yeah, kind of like David. Like,
but he was a horrible
David.
Person.
No, David.
So I can David blame. Wavers. I can blame him for being in love.
Right.
Sad bagpipe noises. I have the weirdest laughs in this episode. I don't know why.
What is your grade for this episode?
No worst parts for me.
Oh, worst parts for you.
The prime minister being shoehorned into this episode feels like, I understand they want to keep up with current events and at least give him a little bit of something, because he is the prime minister, but it just seems so out of place and bizarre and stupid. And I personally don't love the inclusion of it, because again, it just randomly shows up at first when the piano like flashback came up.
I was like, who the fuck is this kid?
Well, no, she says Edward, and I'm just like, are we actually gonna get like a young Edward subplot? That never happened.
I thought about that too, but like, this house is not a palace.
Exactly. It made no sense. I was like, is this their playroom? It looks kind of drab. But I was just like, there's no way they're actually gonna give the younger kids this. But I was correct. But yeah, the shoehorned in prime minister stuff is kind of stupid to me.
Oh, so stupid. And but I guess they have to acknowledge that there was a PM before Thatcher. You know, because
there was also one in the middle of that as well.
Right. But I mean, they
briefly.
Right. But they just, you know, I feel like they feel like it's necessary, whatever.
And then the Camilla stuff, because I hate her.
I hate her too.
I hate her so much.
A lot. So what was your grade for this episode?
It's definitely not going to be the same as your grade. Because I found a lot that I liked in here. I think I was originally going to give it a B+, then I switched to B. And I think I'm going to keep it at B. Actually, maybe B+, because I did like a lot in this episode. I think some of the humor is really good. I like the inclusion of certain characters. I like that the Queen Mother is given something different other than just being the Three Stooges. I like that, or the One Stooge. But I think that the inclusion of characters makes sense for the most part, except for the Prime Minister. And then the conclusion, seemingly their conclusion of the bullshit Camilla, Andrew, Charles thing for now. Obviously, that's not true. But in this self-contained episode, I like that there was the arc proving that things need to be wrapped up. And I agree, things should have been wrapped up here.
And yet they weren't.
But again, self-contained in this episode, it's fine.
Okay.
I like it. It's not my favorite episode of the season, but I do like it.
So I had this as C+, B-, and I settled on C+ before we had this conversation. I'm sticking by C+, because it is like a Disney fake out death to this relationship. You know, it's like it's falling off the cliff, but not dead.
If you fall in a body of water, if you fall off a cliff into a body of water, you're going to survive. Yeah, that's what Disney sequels taught us.
It's a whole Mulan 2 thing. It's also spoiler, the two alert. Towers and... I'm sorry, I'm going to Lord of the Rings.
It's okay.
It's okay. But the bottom line is and of course, having been alive during much of this being played out in the press, I have very little sympathy for Camilla. And
I never said I had sympathy for her.
But of course I know.
You know what? I'm going to change to a B because I still really hate Camilla.
I mean, and maybe it's unfair of me. I mean, there are, and you did point out a lot of really good things about this episode. And I do agree, like Elizabeth standing up for Charles, it's like, it just, again, it feels almost like that bipolarness in the writing. Like she goes from, Charles, you suck, to, oh, Charles, but Charles is the best thing ever. You know, like I feel so sorry for Charles. And I feel like that we see a lot of that unevenness. Like they only know how to write super high or super low kind of thing.
Yeah.
And I feel like that is it's the opposite of what we see with the royals. The royals are more or less even.
Well, again, that's what they want us to see.
But again, maybe what they're trying to do is, portray the unevenness by being uneven.
I have no idea. I don't know if this is a choice. I think it's just the writing. But okay. Anyway,
so
moving on to season 3, episode 10, Cri de Coeur. I never took French. So.
I didn't take French either. I'm making that up. But I have decent pronunciation in French, or so I've been told. I just cannot.
I can try.
I can't conjugate verbs. It's really sad.
I absolutely can't. I can conjugate most Spanish verbs, though.
Yeah, Spanish I can do.
I took more Spanish
Italian
anyway.
I can do.
Italian I cannot.
It's very
sad. I can usually say hello or goodbye or thank you.
All right, but that's really not about
That's us. Not important.
It's not about us right now. It's about freaking Margaret.
Well, okay. First note was not another Margaret episode, but also the fact that it's a season finale is so bizarre to me. But also, I would like to say that there is a content warning in this for attempted suicide. So if that is something that you are sensitive to, please proceed with caution, especially at the end of this discussion of this episode. you might want to skip it. I'll let you know before we get there, but just be aware that that is something that's discussed. I want to make sure nobody's going to be triggered by it.
Yeah, if you're triggered by people cheating on each other, you should
not have
been listening to any of this.
Don't listen to this entire season.
Ever. So Wiz opens with Elizabeth going to see Margaret. And Margaret is still in bed. It's the middle of the day. And Liz is kind of like, what you doing in bed in the middle of the day? She's like, oh, the kids are with the nanny and they're broken things all over the room because she and Tony have had yet another, yes, you guessed it, fight because he's cheating again.
She said he can't help himself. And I wrote in all caps, yes, he fucking can.
Yes.
That's not how cheating works.
he totally fucking can. But he fucking can.
And he fucking is.
The little engine that can, right? And so we cut to Tony driving the child to a cottage for a rest.
The thing.
I mean, I'm kind of
with Margaret. She's definitely like half his age.
She's like 18. I mean, it's like, oh my God.
Well, it's also been funny because Margaret mentioned in season 2 when they were getting together that Peter got together with his 19-year-old secretary. And that was a weird thing. And she brought it up a lot. And it was like, that's disgusting and all that stuff.
And now Tony agreed with her.
And Tony agreed. And Tony is also doing the same thing.
Yeah, because Tony's also a fucking loser.
I know this is next season, but I was thinking about it. It's like, that's similar to Diana and Charles.
Yes, it is. We're going to talk
about
that.
That's a note for next season, but yeah. I'll bring it up later.
I hate that term. I can't believe I said that. I can't believe that came out.
We can move on.
Disgusted. So Tony.
But it's also seen by Margaret's friend.
Right. Her friend sees it. Tony drives her to his place, which we later find out is in Sussex. Again, like a major expensive fucking set piece that no one gives a fuck about. Why
it's fine. I think it's fine because it's like it shows that he's trying to take it, like not do it in the palace or anything like that. So.
Whatever. So the child notices that his bathroom at the Sussex cottage is papered with royal newspaper headlines.
And it's a reminder that Margaret has skeletons in her family's closet, and that's supposed to make her love you more.
Right. And of course, but she never comes and she's never going to say it. See it. And you know, Margaret considers him and the house ugly and misshapen. And the child is like, well, Margaret could fall in love with someone else and then he could get a divorce. And wouldn't that be great?
And he's like, yeah,
puke.
And then Margaret goes to a party and talks about the thing, which is what she calls his, Girl toy. I constantly call the other guy her boy, Margaret's boy toy. So it might as well be girl toy.
I call him child, but you know, whatever.
Child's fine.
Tony's child, Margaret's child, the child.
And then she's talking to her friend about war is our love, contentment is dull. And I was like, that's healthy. Jesus fucking Christ. It's so hard to watch.
It is.
I absolutely hate it because it's just further proof that the fact that this marriage has gone on for as long as it has. With all of this stuff going back and forth, him and apparently he's like, this is not the first time he's cheated on her.
Oh no,
I doubt he ever stopped. And so it makes me wonder, it's like, why are you putting up with this, Margaret? Like, I know maybe the sex is good. That doesn't make a difference. You can have great sex with somebody else who actually will take care of you and love you. Like, you don't need this toxic bullshit cycle.
Well, that's more or less what her friend says. Like, come up to our house. We'll set you up with somebody.
No, that's a little bit later. Right. But Philip and Elizabeth are talking. Well, Philip is talking about the national crisis going on and Elizabeth trying to talk about Margaret's birthday. And
Heath and his prime ministership. Is on the line. They might get Wilson back. That's on the news. And Philip's like, it just keeps getting worse. I can't imagine how much worse it could be. And so, you know, we should be throwing all these people in jail. And instead, they line up like lemmings to reelect them. And I'm like, this is the world we live in now. Margaret's birthday is coming up. Elizabeth is talking about meeting with PM at dinner. And I have in all caps, no. I mean, she's at dinner having this discussion about like policy and the prime minister and just like, it's like, what the fuck?
Mom, you have to wonder like, what else is she going to talk to Philip about sometimes? Like, no, sometimes that's all she talks about.
No. It's a dinner with everybody at Margaret's birthday. Yeah, it's like, no.
A But she said also, she says that to basically everyone in this episode, though. Mm-hmm. How, like, when Wilson won, she's like, oh, I let out an unconstitutional cheer and all that stuff.
Yeah, she says that actually to Wilson. But
again, anyway. Exactly, word for word. And yeah. Right.
So, anyway, so Elizabeth is, she's talking about her meeting with the PM, and
she's excited that Wilson's
gonna be,
back.
He's going to be out and they're going to resign. But Wilson doesn't look well. Margaret then like clinks her glass and she wants everyone to rally around her rather than Tony because Tony is openly cheating. Like,
and he also, he's not even at her birthday party.
Yeah, fuck that guy. I agree with her on this. Like, people,
this part pisses me off.
Right. There should be solidarity and it should be Windsors versus.
She basically wants them to cut Tony off and like not invite him to stuff so that they show a sign of support. Mm. And then the Queen Mother talks about what she likes about Tony, and
the Queen Mother needs to be like beaten over the head.
And then like, and she talks about, oh, but his last film was so good and all that stuff.
Oh my god, I love this. She's like, do you know what I liked about his last film? And Philip's response is dwarves.
What?
I've never seen any of like Lord Snowden's films, so I have no idea what's in his fucking films. But it was,
well, now we have a little bit of an idea.
Making me laugh so hard, I was like, dwarves?
That's really funny. But then Margaret gets very upset because, and like slams her hands on the table, and she's like, she doesn't feel supported by her family when it comes to Tony because they keep praising him, and I don't blame her.
Right,
this is absolutely valid. She has the right to be upset here because. They're being so awful because they're just constantly praising Tony, regardless of how he's treating Margaret.
And one of the things that the Queen Mother says makes me want to slap the fucking shit over. So she says this, she's like, Tony is generous enough to flirt with his mother-in-law.
She likes to feel seen.
And yeah, it's like, you know, that is not enough to not support your child when her husband's cheating.
And Elizabeth is
like horrible.
Elizabeth's kind of just trying to like, play down the field a little bit, just be like, all right, let's not do anything.
And I think what it comes down to is, you know, Tony's pleasant and amiable, and of course he sucks up to them when he's around them. He's not around them very often. So, like, you know, they can tolerate him because it's not them having to live with this shit, right?
Yeah, and they only hear about it from Margaret, and so
right, but
they take that stuff with a grain of salt.
Right, but she storms off, and Philip, and this makes me really mad. This is, again, the bipolar Philip that we see, like, he gets very, very angry about certain things in, you know, these seasons, and I attribute this to poor writing. He's like, we're just also sick of Margaret, that's why we have no sympathy for her.
Yeah, and then Elizabeth looks at Anne and she's like, Anne, no.
Because he says, you know, raise your hand if you don't feel the same, if you feel the same way, or you don't feel,
or don't feel it. Raise your hand if you disagree or something, and then nobody raises their hand. But I feel like it should have been the other way around, like raise your hand if you agree.
Yeah, I agree.
I wish it was that. I'm pretty sure it should have been that. Sad. But either way, Margaret is talking to her friend on the phone, and she's complaining, and she's just like, I hate them all, and all that stuff, and her friend's like, let's come to Glenn.
Right, and what I love about this is we've got Margaret on the Hogwarts Express, and we know Bellatrix did that.
She never goes on the Hogwarts Express.
No, we know Bellatrix did when she was in school at Hogwarts.
Well, yeah, because she was going to Hogwarts.
Right, and this would be the right time frame.
On her way to Glenn, Margaret opens her book and sees a paper. Piece of paper that is acting as a bookmark from Tony. That's a note that's just insulting her.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically talking about how ugly she is.
What the fuck?
Yeah, it's like,
and then you have this flashback of Margaret and Tony fighting and then having angry sex, and I'm like, healthy.
And she's like, ooh, and you know, like, she misses him. I'm like, oops, stop it. She has a super luxe sleeping car on this train, though.
Well, of course she does.
But Tony is in his Sussex cottage,
content with his thing.
I've got a note about something. Money wanted on boring filming, something. I can't remember.
What?
I don't actually. Oh, the money wasted on boring filming.
Well, I feel like they were just trying
because
to show.
I just don't fucking care. And so Margaret is, because they didn't need any of that. Margaret's asleep in the car when she arrives at her friend's house.
And her friend doesn't have an eye patch anymore. I'm very disappointed.
Yeah, it's very sad. Oh, you mean the guy?
Yeah, it's what made him interesting.
Yeah, but no, he's not interesting anymore. And so there is a child there. His name is Roddy Llewellyn. And Margaret's like, ooh, I want to take the child to get swimming trunks because he's flirting with me, and yay.
They go shopping.
Right, yay, they go shopping. And she finds out more information about him. Like, he's basically a gig guy.
He's a gardener.
He helps at the college. He's a DJ. He cleans something.
He's a gardener.
Right, but that's his great passion. So he wants to be a gardener.
Mm.
And she's like, well, we're going to get you some. They flirt while he's getting swimming trunks for him at the store.
And he looks good.
She gets a little tiny Speedo with the British flag on it. And she's like, oh, my garden's been neglected. In Mystique, right? And so he's got nimble fingers, and now he's wearing a Speedo. And then they swim, and
Margaret sings.
And they're both terrible.
On the bottom, Carter singing number 4.
Red Hot Mama, and they are both terrible. I mean, they're both just awful. And their icky outfits. She's got a top hat on. It's so 70s. And it's kind of like, oh, please stop it. And
it looks like they were going into like one of those like photo booths. And they were just taking the props.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, it's dumb. So,
but the friend sees them go to the same room, and friend and her husband, former eye pouch guy, talk about how, that's the only way I'm going to refer to him because I don't know his name. And they talk about how they might regret setting them up. But he says, like, she's basically dating Tony again because he looks so similar. Right. It's just like, oh, he's I didn't think about that.
Yeah, it's just a younger version. They're well, she's got red hair, whatever, fine, it's fine.
Anyway, then Elizabeth and Tony meet up, and he shows her, like, pictures of Clairvoy and Matt Smith.
This makes me so fucking angry. All right, so this whole encounter makes me angry. So Tony's like, I'll just do anything for family. And because he's got like a mug and a teapot that he wants
for her
to market
jubilee.
For her jubilee. And she's kind of like, oh. And Tony's like, I'll just do anything for family. And Elizabeth's like, well, I'm not going to preach to you about marriage, but I think it's best to that turning a blind eye is the best approach. It's like,
she talked about the end of season 2,
but it's like the doing nothing is the best approach. It's like,
but that,
oh
again, that's
god,
something they've been preaching.
Oh my god, it's just
regardless.
But then he's like, well, I have been thinking about getting back together with Margaret, but I heard what she's doing, and
you know that he was never thinking about getting back with Margaret. Never. He's just using it as an excuse now. But also, Margaret has given him the ammunition to.
Right. And so, because she has taken the child to Mystique. She meets the same friends.
She's also so rude to everybody.
She's awful. She's really not a nice person. And it's hard, again, I think what's hard to sympathize, and that Philip would have made more ground with me if he had said, if she weren't rude, you know, and it's not just the storming out. The storming out, I can see, you know, having a fit of temper because no one's supporting you. That I sympathize with, but I don't sympathize with this kind of rudeness. Like, you're there to meet friends. She's like, no, I don't want to do anything.
Send these people away. I don't want to talk to them.
Yeah. It's like,
and then yells at her boy toy. And then it's just,
right, you don't know anything. I've got to teach you everything. Blah, blah, blah.
That's healthy.
But she does have a lovely house, and the child starts gardening at the house.
And they have sex. And then Helena Bonham Carter briefly sings again.
Oh, right.
Number five.
Before that, they're playing She's Not There. You know, they've got some good
by the
music.
Zombies.
Yeah. And
but like a cover of it.
Right.
Yeah, I love that song, though.
It is a great song. But you know, there's some cuteness in the montage, but the montage goes on way too long.
Well, she also gets a vision of Tony that's not real, of him like just sitting there looking at her
contemptuously.
And I'm just like, really? We didn't need to see that.
Yeah. I made a note of this. I love the earrings they put on Helena Bonham Carter as she's rambling about happiness, and I don't care what she's saying either. And the child doesn't care and isn't paying attention. She's upset because the child's not paying attention.
It's kind of hard to follow you, Margaret, right, sometimes.
Really, right. And then there is a photo because she's like, happiness is elusive, whatever.
I don't care.
And so then, but while this is happening, she asks for the child to put sunscreen on her, and she volunteers. And there are photos taken by the paparazzi, and they make it to the press.
And everyone sees. Yes. Also, I love that they included like Charles singing it as well.
Yeah,
randomly.
Like, oh.
Even though he's in like the Caribbean too, it's like it would make sense for him to have a little moment with Margaret. But he does in like the next Margaret episode, like the last Margaret episode of season 4. I remember he visits Margaret at some point, but I was like, that's after Diana. So
but
that's not any, that was not yeah, anything to do with
I
anything.
I don't remember that, but go ahead.
I do. That would have made sense.
So here. Yeah, Philip is pointing out, oh, how stupid can she be? Tony's child is ecstatic, like, yay, we can be together now.
Oh wait, no. Before that.
But Queen Mother's livid, yeah.
Yeah, no, they want to bring Margaret back to sort things out. Elizabeth wants to know the facts, but the Queen Mother points to the paper and is like, these are the facts. And I'm like, well, the pictures are, yeah, sure. But again, you want to talk to Margaret about it first.
Right, but she's so angry. It's like bipolar. We had not seen that level of anger in the first two seasons. And you know, we go from super comic relief to super angry in the Queen Mother. And I'm kind of like, please,
that's just the season. But yeah. The thing goes to Tony's dark room and talks to him about the implications of Margaret cheating in the divorce, and he says, did you expect me to jump for joy? She's my wife, mother of my children. And I was like, what the fuck do you mean? We know she is, and if you aren't happy with her cheating, maybe you should have kept your dick to yourself, you asswipe. I truly hate you. That's what I wrote down.
I really love that. I had forgotten, and I'd written this down too, about the Queen Mother when she's angry, like Elizabeth's like, well, you know, Margaret doesn't respond to me demanding her come home. And the Queen Mother's like, then I'll do it. And she tells Martin, get her home now. And you know, Martin kind of stands there, whatever. And she goes,
are you still there?
Yeah. Are you still there? I mean, and that kind of rudeness is not something we have seen with her. She's not been demanding.
Well, she's been rude before, though.
Not like that.
Yes, she has. When she was judging those people coming to the palace.
It's not rude to their face. It's different to me.
Yeah. Well, staff, either way.
Yeah. Okay, that makes it all right.
Well, I'm not saying it's all right. Rude is rude, and you shouldn't be rude.
Right. So Margaret gets back from Mystique on the plane with the child, and they get
the other
car.
Child.
Yeah, hit her child. And not literally. Not
we never see place. Margaret's children, really.
Yeah, I know. It's terrible. And she won't hold his hand in the car. Like it's,
well, I mean, there are cameras going off, so I think it would make it more of a statement. The fact that he's there at all is making a statement, but still.
Right, the fact that she didn't leave him Mystique, but whatever. So they get back to Kensington Palace, and Tony is there.
And he's like, where else would I be? And she's just like, where are you?
He's like, this is my home. And she's like, hell the fuck. Oh, I shouldn't say that. But anyway, that's what she's thinking. He's like, you haven't lived here.
Oh, and also the boy toy goes up to shake Tony's hand. And I was like, dude, read the room.
Yeah,
like,
exactly. Yeah.
You're the other man. Don't ask.
Not cool.
I love
not
that Tony cool. Just looks at the hand and is just like, really?
Yeah, he's like, no. And Margaret then says she wants Tony to leave.
Well, she also.
And they start having this kind of performance fight in front of the child.
No, but she also mentions that Tony leaves hate notes around the house.
Like, oh, right.
How do I loathe thee? Let me count the ways. And also they have a throwback to the Jewish manicurist line.
Right. So yeah. So Margaret called, but before she goes there, she tells Tony a misshapen cripple. And she then pulls out all these notes. The child leaves and Margaret chases after him, but he's gone.
Well, no, Tony also says, if you go after him, I will divorce you. And she's like, you wouldn't dare. And then whatever.
Yeah.
Again, you could have done this ages ago.
But yeah, didn't. So Wilson shows up. He's now been elected prime minister. He's all white haired now.
Again, where the fuck did this come from? Like, it's such a small thing. And we could have cut the shopping trip short to give Wilson a little bit. Like, oh, yeah, he is elected. See a random meeting with Elizabeth before right. He just announces, oh, I have Alzheimer's, so I'm going to be resigning.
Yeah.
It's exactly. Such whiplash.
Exactly. And so I love this, the way they portray it. Like, Elizabeth's like, oh, you'll be fine. We've had people with worse problems. She's like, no.
You haven't
this is
really.
A mental health issue. No. And I respect Wilson a lot more than Anthony, whatever his name is.
I almost said Stralin.
Yeah.
Another one of the ex love
interests. The drug addict guy. But yeah, it's like, what the hell?
Eden,
that's right. But Elizabeth's like, oh, you know, but I liked you for the companionship better than Keith and blah, blah, blah.
And then
we were such friends.
But then she mentions she wants to dine with him at Downing Street. That hasn't happened since Winston Churchill, and he agrees. And it's a nice gesture.
Right. One of the things she says, my wife, Mrs. Wilson, would love that. It's like, no, she fucking would.
She clearly doesn't care.
But whatever. No, she hates the queen. But
okay, here's the part that's a bit dicey as far as like if you are triggered by attempted suicide or suicide in general and you don't want to listen at this point, maybe you should check out now.
Right, because Martin the secretary comes in, and Elizabeth can see that he has got bad news.
Margaret has overdosed on sleeping pills.
And the queen mother, they meet about it with the doctors, and they talk about the dosage of sleeping pills that she's taken. And the queen mother's like, so this is more of a coup de coup rather than the coup de grace. Like, she didn't take enough to actually kill herself, but she took a lot.
Mm.
So more, it's more a cry of the heart. And Elizabeth goes to see Margaret. And actually, this is very, and by the way, in that meeting, Elizabeth, the person who can't cry, is teary. So whatever, fuck you people. Elizabeth is upset because, and she goes to see Margaret. She's like, you know, I'm really upset because it was touch and go. And Mark, and she,
well, she asks, also asked if she meant it. Yeah. And Margaret's like, I really don't know.
Yeah.
And then Tony apparently is back with the thing.
Yeah.
Apparently the future Lady Snowden, because Tony and Margaret are going to separate and divorce. But the news of the Prime Minister's resignation might cover it up a bit. So Yay. Maybe it's the best time to do that. Elizabeth says that Margaret is a good sister and she's good at that. And she was reminded of what life would be like without her. And it would be unbearable.
Right. What she says is, you are the most important to me, which again, in the moment, I can see that.
It's her sister.
It's her sister. And her sister almost died. And they've been, you know, like,
that's going to affect you.
Absolutely.
Regardless of your
relationship. And Margaret's like, well, then we must both carry on. Because, and then I like this interchange between them a lot. Mm-hmm. Elizabeth asked her, should I do this 25th Jubilee? Should I be doing this? She's like, absolutely. And why so they intercut this discussion about it with Elizabeth actually going out for the parade that is part of the 25th Jubilee.
Yep.
And Margaret says, because Elizabeth's like, oh, I'm not a very good queen, blah, blah, blah. She's like, you've been calm and stable, you know, and you are the thing that papers over the cracks. You know, if we're falling apart, you're the thing that makes things work. Elizabeth the Good has a stupid, ugly hat. The queen, and she says, the queen cannot flinch because you've been chosen. And, you know, if there's a chasm, we all fall into it. So it's your job to make sure there is no chasm.
And she's like, but do I have to do that alone? It's like, there's only one queen.
Yeah.
And at least she admits that.
Yeah. Yeah. And then you see them setting up for this. And so Charles and Philip both have to ride behind
the carriage. And Charles has the big ass hat.
It's really looks funny. So sulky. It's like super. I got to give Josh, I got a major props for this because he
has the
like
default sulk
such
down.
A sulky. Oh, yeah. Performance. And Philip actually looks great. He's very proud of her. Yeah. And I love like the Tobias Menzies. Like, it's just a little bit of a smile. Like, you go, smart girl. You get it done. And that's they have a very short montage of the parade, which I was, they could have spent a little more time on that than like Mystique, but whatever, fuck
that's
it.
Fine.
And that's the end of the episode and the end of the season.
Mm-hmm.
So what was your best part?
I have two, Elizabeth caring and talking to Margaret. I really like that conversation. And some of the music, not by Helena Bonham Carter. Those were my best parts because I do like she's not there.
So. Yeah, I did not write down, I should have, my best. I had written down the banter at the department store because I did think that the flirtation was quite
it was just
funny.
So pointless.
Of course it's pointless, but the whole thing with children, you know, the children in this episode is pointless. No. So, but the other thing that I really liked was Margaret telling Elizabeth how she's done her job, how well she's done it.
Yes.
Well,
also her and Tony getting a divorce. Thank God.
Well, it's good. Yeah. This is, again, you like cleaning up messes. So those are the things that I had as best parts. What were your worst parts?
I have many. Okay. In all caps, Tony, with a lot of exclamation points.
Oh, my
points,
God.
Because he is just the worst. Yeah. And Margaret, she sucks too.
Yeah.
And how boring this is and how unhealthy all of her relationships are and how much she needs help. And also all of the cheating and fighting. So hard to watch. And I don't know. I understand that they're trying to get the message across that this is not a healthy relationship. But it just, them constantly having to like have her justify her relationship by being like, oh, this is just how we are. Or whatever. And again, it's
our love is war. What the fuck is that?
Yeah, it's just, it, for me, it just, it doesn't justify all these years of abuse to each other.
Yeah.
It's not all one-sided either.
I agree.
And it, I feel worse for Margaret because Tony's the worst, but she made the decision to marry him and she allowed this to happen for so long. Yeah. Obviously, I'm not going to try to blame the victim, but also she didn't really help the relationship either by cheating.
Is she the victim in this? I don't know. I mean, honestly,
there really isn't much of a victim.
Right, because she's got a lot of the power in this relationship. This is not a situation where she has no power. She's the fucking princess.
No. I just think that they should have ended it earlier than this.
They should never have gotten started.
That's true. Opinion,
but that's a separate question altogether.
Thanks, Peter. yeah, all right. So what are your worst parts?
I have three question marks and so many listed. I mean, because I agree with you. There is so much. And you know, when we were talking about it, the end portion makes this episode a better episode than it had been all. You know, you spent like a whole hour getting to like the only good part.
Oh, I also like the whole conversation with Wilson, I will say. I do like that.
But again, that's at the end, so fuck.
You know? I didn't even realize, I like didn't catch the like mention of him winning the election. So right. He just showed up and I'm like, what the fuck are you doing here?
Hey, wait here, guys. And then wait, you're gone.
And then I was just like, oh yeah, I have Alzheimer's. I'm like, what?
Yeah, I mean, that's basically how they treat it. And it's terribly, terribly sad. But again, you know, I feel like the absolute worst part of this to me is obviously the Tony Margaret relationship, which is toxic. I mean, we keep using that term toxic,
but it is.
It is. And it's not, you know, we don't like, obviously we like healthy relationships. So I don't think either of us thinks much of what we're seeing with a lot of this. Mm-hmm. So how did you grade this episode?
You should probably go first.
I gave it a B-.
What?
I know, I gave it a B-. Why? In part because there's beautiful filming. And there are some good performances.
Helena
Bonham Carter's performance, I think, in this is really very good. Yes, they're singing, I'm sorry. But other than that, I feel like she portrays someone who has been bruised by her family so much that this is the only thing she can think of to do. Hmm. And I feel like that is done decently. And also, you know, there is some symmetry in my grade here between the first episode being a B- and the last episode being a B- in this season, because I feel like that's what this whole season has been. Hmm. How did you grade it?
I originally gave it a D+.
Ooh! Ouch!
I changed it slightly to a C- because of that last scene.
Yeah.
I hate this episode. I despise it. It drags. I don't like the parts that they drag on are the drag on. the parts that they really just the longest parts are her and the boy toy.
Yeah.
And that's the most useless part. Yes. And it's glorifying. Oh, well, look how happy she is when she's cheating on her husband. I don't fucking care. Just leave your husband. And if you're really unhappy with your relationship, clearly it's not an issue anymore because Elizabeth allows her to divorce Tony.
Yeah.
And you clearly could have done this at any other time. You didn't have to cheat first to give him ammunition. You could have just left him and then done whatever the fuck you want. Yeah. It doesn't make any sense why they're just like, oh, but look how happy she is cheating on her husband. And look how happy he is when he's cheating on his wife. Aren't they just happier apart? Don't you want them to stop? Yeah, you're going to let them stop at the end of this episode because that's how it works and how that happened. Well, how it ended anyway. But I don't like how we get there. It just is painful. It just is long and it's pointless. I like the zombies song.
Yeah, that was good.
And I like the Jubilee stuff. Why couldn't it have focused on Jubilee stuff? This could have been a subplot. It doesn't need to be the entire focus of this episode.
Yeah, and I think this is like one of those episodes where like, oh, we must get back to humanizing Elizabeth because, oh, we've made her this monster during the rest of the season.
It's just whiplash, honestly.
Right, it is. And I think, again, it's the unevenness of the writing.
And you know, while we're talking about it, I just feel like this is indicative of the whole season.
Yes.
Right. I feel like that is just an inherent problem with this entire season, is it's gone back and forth in such a weird way.
Well, how about I ask you this? We already know the answer, but how would you rank the season so far? 1 through 3. I think my
1, 2, 3.
Season 2
is questionable.
Think my opinion originally was that 2 was better than 1, but I actually think 1 is best. Because it's 1, 2, 3 for me as well. And so I guess we'll see how things go in season 4.
Sorry. Yes, we will, because we're about to start season 4. And you know, truly, I hope that you're enjoying this 2-episode format. If you are, let us know. If you're not, let us know that too, because we're going to keep doing it until we're told not to, with The Crown at least.
No, we'll see. We'll keep going.
We're going to keep going. Absolutely. But we would love for you to join us. And
cheers.